This is Free Thought Radio with your hosts, Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us. Above us, only sky.
Godless heathens and pagan infidels, I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist.
And this is Free Thought Radio.
And the show is a production of the National Freedom From Religion Foundation. We are the country's largest organization of atheists and agnostics and freethinkers and other types of irreligious and irreverent non-believers. We work to keep state and church separate, and we'll hear a little bit about that, or we'll hear a lot about that today, actually. And we also work to educate the public about the views of the largest, fastest-growing segment of American religious identification right now, the non-believers. Coming up in today's show, we'll also talk with the new executive director of the Secular Coalition for America.
But now, for the next two segments, we are going to talk about the Freedom From Religion Foundation's newest federal lawsuit taken thanks to an attorney in North Carolina, George Daly, that we're going to get on the phone in a minute. And this case briefly is about the fact that in South Carolina, they've changed the law and they are giving academic credit for students who take religious release time instruction. And we have some TV coverage about our lawsuit. It was Channel 7.
It was just filed this week,
just
right?
Just filed last week. So let's listen to that.
Bob Moss says he has no problem with students taking advantage of a 1954 Supreme Court ruling which allows students to attend religious education classes. It's the fact they are receiving credit for it.
The whole family got together and we realized that not only was that unconstitutional, but it was wrong and insensitive.
This is the lawsuit filed by Charlotte attorney George Daly on behalf of Moss, fellow district parent Ellen Tillett, and a Wisconsin-based Freedom From Religion Foundation.
We think it violates the First Amendment to the United States Constitution, which prohibits the establishment of religion. That's colloquially known as the requirement of separation of church and state.
In 2006, the South Carolina legislature said elective credit could be given for release time classes in South Carolina as long as evaluations are based on secular criteria and don't involve public funds. Moss alleges the district doesn't monitor the content of the class, which is offered at St. Christopher's Episcopal Church next to Spartanburg High School.
Clearly, they're trying to get around things in order to do that.
People we spoke to support the idea of students receiving credit.
I think it's wonderful, and I think they should have the option to have it on campus also, because without God, we have nothing.
I think taking God out of the schools is ridiculous. I think that as a Christian, God should be in everything that we do.
Moss, who is a college biology professor, says he's speaking as an educator and a parent.
Because there's something wrong in the educational system, it's really important to me to do whatever I can to fix it.
His attorney says this case should set a precedent.
That a religious education course of this type cannot be given academic credit.
Okay, well, we have on the phone with us the attorney you just heard, George Daly, and he's done an immense amount of research into this problem, which was brought to our attention about a year ago by a South Carolina resident who realized it was going on and thought that it was unconstitutional. And George Daly is in Charlotte. We've got him on the phone, and he's a very distinguished civil rights attorney. Welcome back to Free Thought Radio, George.
Good to be with you, Annie.
Now, this is sounds a little bit esoteric. How do we explain the importance of this lawsuit to the typical listener?
This is sort of the next step down the road, but a long time later. The Supreme Court in 1948 had a case about having religious figures come into school and conduct classes on school time.
McCollum case, right?
McCollum case.
Yeah.
And they had no trouble saying that that violated the Constitution. It was the church and state were too much intertwined there. And that decision created a huge furor in the United States. And 6 years later, a similar but different case came up. The only real different thing was that the classes were now conducted off during school time, but not on school premises. And the famous liberal justice William O. Douglas wrote an opinion in which he said this is perfectly constitutional. It doesn't mingle church and state too much. And he made his well-known statements that you know, we're religious people and our institutions
presuppose
a supreme being.
Hey, George, we're having a little bit of trouble hearing you. Could you speak up?
Okay.
Great.
All right. It's not usual that lawyers have trouble being heard. But
that's much better.
We're now at the next step after that case. There's been very little development in that end of the law in the intervening 57 years. But now we have a case which is the case that William O. Douglas decided, but added on to it is the additional fact that now you get a grade for going to the religious release time classes, and that grade is an official high school grade. So not only do we release the children to go to religious school for an hour a day, but if they make an A+ or if they make an F-, that becomes their official high school governmental grade.
In South Carolina.
So that gives students quite an advantage if they take their release time, one supposes.
Well, it may or it may not. I mean, they might get an F-.
I kind of doubt it.
Well, you know, I'm interested to find out what happens if some child comes in the day before the final exam and says, "Well, I'm sorry, but I've lost my faith."
Yes, that would be very interesting. Now, this was a law that was passed in 2006 by the South Carolina legislature, isn't it?
Yes and no. There was a law passed in 2006 by the South Carolina legislature that allows this giving of academic credit.
Mm-hmm.
But what we're after in the lawsuit is the particular action of one school board in Spartanburg County, South Carolina, which wrote its own policy, which does the same thing as the state statute, except for a few little bells and whistles here and there. So it's that policy that we're going after instead of the state statute.
But if we get, if we win in the district level, won't that impact the state law?
I should hope.
Yes, let us hope so.
I want to tell you something, George. I went to release time education about 1960. I guess it was right after that decision when I was in grammar school. And it was 1 hour a week is what it was. And we would all go out to the ball field and getting three lines. Two lines were long, and there was one little tiny short line of Jewish kids. We'd get on our own little bus or van and go off to, we went off to a church a few blocks away from the school.
Mm-hmm.
And I spent the time memorizing Bible verses, basically. Mm-hmm. And then we came back to school to actually officially end the school day.
Yes.
So Dan, do you think you should have been giving an academic credit for that?
Well, I did a good job. I can still quote some of those verses I learned, but no, of course, today I don't think you know, we should be giving secular public school credit for a private religious function.
So, George, tell us more about this devotional class that is involved in the Spartanburg School District. What do they do? What's their purpose?
I've read their website, and their purpose is to bring children to Christ.
And the meaning of Christ's resurrection in their lives.
Right. From what I can tell, it's a very sophisticated class. The papers I've seen are, they discuss Matthew Arnold's poetry and they discuss Gerard Manley Hopkins' poetry and have discussions about them, and that's pretty high-level stuff. But the whole object of the discussion appears to be to show that the religious view of poetry is more valid than the secular view of poetry.
Yes, I mean, if there was a legitimate comparative religion class in a high school, although I think it belongs more in college, we wouldn't be complaining because that would be academic. But these classes that these kids go to are devotional in purpose.
Yeah, they're upper level Sunday school. Yes.
The very fact that they have to be held off the premises should be a signal that something is funky here. Something is not quite right. If it really was a class for credit, then they should proudly have it during the school time. And of course, they can't. So there's a state church problem here.
Right. I couldn't agree with you more.
Now,
the Supreme Court in about the 80s dealt with what I think is a similar situation up in Boston, where the municipal legislature in Cambridge had basically given a church the power to veto any nearby liquor license. And the Supreme Court said you just can't donate governmental powers to a religious organization. That's the critical thing they've done.
Yes.
Donated a governmental power.
Because the school and the teachers have no control over the grade that this church has granted this student for, you know, getting Christ into their life.
Right.
And but
right.
yet they're forced to put that into the GPA and count it as if it's a bona fide class.
Exactly.
Well, when we come back from this short break, we want to talk more with George Daly. I'm Annie Laurie Geller. We're here with Dan Barker about the plaintiffs, our very important local plaintiffs in this South Carolina case. We'll be right back.
Hi, my name is Karen Park. I'm from the Atlanta, Georgia area, and I know that religion makes absolutely no sense.
Speaking freely, thinking freely. This is Free Thought Radio.
And I'm Dan Barker here with Annie Laurie Geller. And we have on the phone with us the attorney from North Carolina, George Daly, talking about the Freedom From Religion Foundation's most recent lawsuit.
And George, we were talking about this is an academic credit being given for religious release time in a school district, Spartanburg, South Carolina. And you did a lot of homework on this and a lot of research. And tell us something about the local plaintiffs.
Okay, I'll be glad to do that. Let me say two things. First, if you can't hear me, yell at me, and I'll try to talk a little louder.
Okay.
And secondly, correct me if I'm wrong. This is the first suit that the foundation has had in South Carolina?
That's right.
Well, I will be... I will be personally offended if there are not some lyrics written about it.
Oh, you want me to write a song?
Yeah, there's some, you know, a lot of people write about down south. It's a good subject for satirical songs, and I'll give you 6 months.
Oh, there you go, Dan.
Okay, but I'll run it by you first so that I don't accidentally offend some sensibilities, down if there are any down there.
Right, if I don't hear from you in 6 months, I'm going to take a non-suit.
Uh-oh.
I got the ideas going right now.
All right. Let me tell you about the plaintiffs. There are two plaintiffs. I despaired of finding anyone who would be a plaintiff since religion can be a sort of a blood sport in South Carolina. It's not trifled with often. But we have found a wonderful plaintiff whose name is Bob Moss, and Bob is a Harvard-educated professor at Wofford College, and he teaches biology. So he and his daughter are the plaintiffs, and his daughter is nameless in the lawsuit.
He's the man we heard on that news clip at the beginning
of
the show,
yeah.
Moss.
And there's another plaintiff who is a charming woman who is the librarian at Wofford College, and her name is Ellen Tillett. And her son is one of the plaintiffs.
So her son is in that school district?
Right. Probably for standing, you have to have someone who has children in the school district that you're suing.
And they are offended by this policy.
Right, very much. Moss is, and probably for different reasons. I haven't inquired... too closely into it, but both of them have a serious legal and indeed an emotional objection to it. There was a letter sent out by the church group that does the release time religious education at the beginning of the soon after the policy was enacted. And it's really a long letter about how we're going to educate children in Jesus if you'll just allow us to have your permission to take your children over here for an hour a day.
And it's your understanding that the school distributed that letter?
I'm waiting to find out. Mm-hmm. I should think that they had to get the the address list, at least from the school. I wouldn't think the address lists of students would be public, but I don't know that yet. But both clients, for different reasons, just found it offensive to be getting a letter about religious education when they hadn't solicited it.
Well, we are so terribly grateful to you for all the work you've done, George. And it's been a lot, and a lot of driving and a lot of research. And we think it's a very important kind of case to take because it's a foot in the door. But we've only got about a minute and a half left, and I have to do a quick subject change, which is that you are one of the attorneys that has represented men at Guantanamo Base.
That's correct.
How many did you represent?
Well, I've had three clients down there. I now have this one remaining.
And so I wanted your take on what the administration is doing at Guantanamo.
My take is that the administration is finding it very hard to deal with what the Bush administration did. And I would say, in my book, they're not doing a very good job of dealing with it. They've generally reasserted national security positions that were asserted by the Bush administration. Mind you, they're much better than the Bush administration, but they leave a lot to be desired. I suspect that President Obama desperately wants to close Guantanamo because somehow it's become his problem. Well, obviously he's the president, so it's his problem, even though he didn't create it. But I'm a little disconcerted about his positions about the extent of presidential power.
We have run out of time, but thank you so much and for what you're doing at Guantanamo as well.
Good.
And it's been delightful to talk with you.
With George Daly, an attorney in North Carolina. I'm Dan Barker here with Annie Laurie Gaylor for Free Thought Radio. We'll be right back to talk with the executive director of the Secular Coalition for America.
Ask for a sample issue of Free Thought today and find out more about the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. This is Free Thought Radio. As Mark Twain said, faith is believing what you know ain't so. This is Free Thought Radio.
And we're back for the second half of the show.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor here with Dan Barker.
And the Freedom From Religion Foundation, which produces Free Thought Radio, is a member organization of a national group called the Secular Coalition for America. We are one of 10 national secular, non-theistic organizations. The Secular Coalition for America exists to promote the views and opinions of the secular and the non-theists, and also to lobby Congress and the White House on issues related to non-theism and secularism. And the Secular Coalition for America just hired a new executive director. From the last week's press release, the Secular Coalition for America, the advocacy voice for the broad and diverse non-theist community, proudly announced the selection of Sean Faircloth as its new executive director. Faircloth has been a vocal champion for the separation of church and state throughout his decade of service as an elected official in the Maine legislature. So welcome to Free Thought Radio, Sean.
Thank you very much for having me.
And you just basically hit the ground running. This is like your first full week of actually working there at the office in D.C.
That's exactly right, because just the timing worked out thus that I had to attend a couple of conferences, which were really excellent and educational for me. One was the American Humanist Association.
I saw you there in Tempe.
Yeah. And then the American Ethical Union. So the timing worked out that way. But actually, it turned out to be a great introduction. I got to meet a lot of people, learn a lot. I've been non-theistic for many years, but I had a great opportunity to learn a lot more about the movement from people face-to-face, which is different than reading about it. So it worked out very well, and yes, now this is my first full week where I'm actually sitting at a desk for 5 days in a row.
So as executive director, you're running the office, but you're also going to be doing some direct lobbying yourself, right?
Absolutely. That is part of our job duties. The Secular Coalition, to their credit and to the credit of the excellent staff at Secular Coalition for America and our wonderful board, have really made tremendous strides from a founding only a few short years ago to where now we have a legislative director, we have a media person, we have a lot more firepower, if you will, than we did when it was one person by themselves. And really, I want to express publicly thanks to Lori Lipman Brown, my predecessor, who's now the emeritus executive director, because she started from really ground zero, if you will, and moved us to a great level. So we owe a great debt of thanks to her and her efforts. So a lot has been done long before I ever showed up that has really moved us forward as a movement. And Dan, you mentioned about how we lobby and also about how we advocate, but I would say it even more than that, that really this is a civil rights movement for people who happen to agree with Mark Twain, who introduced your show, who happen to agree with Albert Einstein, that their voices and the voices of people who agree with them should be included fully in American society. So that, it's a real honor for me.
That wasn't actually Mark Twain who said that. That was our announcer, but yeah.
Yeah. Oh, he wasn't a guest. No, he was quoting him.
He was quoting him, yeah. Wouldn't it be nice if Mark Twain were still around to give us some of
right.
his wit?
Well, no, and are you taking stock of Congress these days with a new administration? We still have only one representative, Pete Stark, who publicly says that he's a non-believer. And have you any idea what it's going to be like to plead this cause for non-theism in Congress?
I think things are better. I think there are areas of significant concern. I think we do have to tip our hat to the President of the United States of America, Barack Obama, who has on repeated occasions, including in his inaugural, mentioned non-believers and included them with others, which is something unprecedented, certainly to the degree that Barack Obama has done so. So,
you know, Bush did that too. So I'm not sure I'm going to buy that that's enough.
Oh, you know? It's not enough, and I agree with you completely. It's not enough, but I do think he's done it more. That doesn't mean, and I think you're raising a valid point, that we in any way back down from our principles or for our advocacy. For example, the president, when he was candidate Obama, made a comment in Zanesville, Ohio, about no discrimination in these so-called, and I don't prefer this term, but these so-called faith-based initiatives, and in that context, though we would, following the values of James Madison, say that should not exist at all, at a minimum, we think the president should follow through on the statement he made in Zanesville, Ohio, that there should be no discrimination in these organizations, and we want to advocate to the president that he do so, and to the administration that he do so. And that leads us to another aspect of this, is that with this White House, there is at least, and we've seen this in our direct experience, more opportunity to directly advocate to the White House. So in the past, we had a situation where we felt the door was completely closed, and we advocated to Congress. We intend to continue to advocate to Congress, no doubt about that, but that we have an opportunity at least where there are some doors open, some communication open, and we intend to advocate. And as you're pointing out, that doesn't mean we roll over by any means. We need to advocate just as strongly to the administration as we do to Congress, and we're not going to change that because there's a different person in the White House.
Well, I mean, I think it was very, very disappointing and distressing. Well, we knew that Barack Obama was going to continue the faith-based initiative because he said that as candidate in Zanesville. But, you know, we are seeing, for example, an anti-abortion person being appointed to Health and Human Services faith-based partnership group. We are seeing the Pentecostal running the faith-based office in the White House. Dan and I were two of the three plaintiffs in the Hein versus Freedom from Religion Foundation lawsuit. And so we feel this very personally that the only people in this country who are probably going to really actively oppose the faith-based initiative at this point really are seculars, and that we really need to try to find some allies in Congress. And there are some, a few.
Yeah, and I think we need to get out there, build those relationships on certainly the so-called faith-based initiatives and on other measures as well. And we're really looking carefully at that because one of the canards you've heard it a million times, as many of your listeners have, is about the morality of atheists. And I think we need to return that word to its proper place. So much recently, the use of the term morality has been connected to old scripture directives regarding sexuality. And I consider morality to be deeply important and a word that I embrace. And that would include compassionate treatment of our fellow human beings. And where those people of faith agree with those values, I commend them and we should commend them. But unfortunately, and certainly from my legislative service, I've seen this, there are times when, in fact, people who follow what they point to in the language of Scripture turns away from what I think are basic morality. We know that with equal treatment of gay citizens. But I would also say there's significant areas of child safety law. That was an area of specialty for me in the legislature, where directly things that endanger the health and safety of children exist because of theistic views, and that we, as a secular community, need to speak out for this basic morality, and we intend to explore legislative possibilities in that regard as well.
Are you talking about the exemptions? I mean, I don't know if that's in the congressional level, but the exemptions for parents who neglect to treat their children for sicknesses because they believe in faith healing?
And some of them die from it.
Was that what you were...
That is one of the areas, and obviously a tragic one when children actually die because people are not getting them appropriate medical care. And you're dead on that that is an exemption that to me is inappropriate, whether at the federal or at the state level. And there's certainly the power, if Congress were to choose to do so, to say no, all children are human beings worthy of just treatment and healthy treatment, and we're not going to exempt them from safety. But another example, which I think is really striking. I worked as a legislator for many years on early childhood issues and children's issues in general. And we have, are developing good and better, at least, standards for child care facilities throughout the country. This is just one example. And in some states, they exempt theistic organizations from child care regulations. These regulations were put in place for a reason, because of the safety of children. And I think it's important and incumbent on us morally to speak out. And if religious people want to say they agree with this, then I will be the first to applaud them. But unfortunately, some groups feel that they are free to ignore what are basic child safety laws.
Well, let's talk about that when we come back after the break. And I also want to ask a little bit about what it's like being a non-believer in the state legislature. I'm Dan Barker. I'm here with Annie Laurie Gaylor for Free Thought Radio. We're talking with Sean Faircloth, the executive director of the Secular Coalition for America, and we'll be right back.
Hi, my name is Lee from Madison, Wisconsin, and I'm on Free Thought Radio.
It ain't necessarily so. This is Free Thought Radio.
It ain't necessarily so. The things that you're liable to read in the Bible, as Ira Gershwin said, it ain't necessarily so. I'm Dan Barker, and I'm here with Annie Laurie Gaylor for Free Thought Radio. And we have on the phone with us Sean Faircloth. He's the new executive director for the Secular Coalition for America, talking about advocacy in Congress and in the country and in the White House for the views of the non-believers. And Sean, this is different for you, isn't it? You just came out of, what, 10, 12 years in the main legislature, is that right?
10 years total.
And you were on the other side of lobbyists for all that time. Did you have any trouble as a non-believer doing a job of public service?
No. In fact, I will say that if looking back on my life, when I was in high school, I tried out for the high school play, and it turned out to be Inherit the Wind, and I studied hard, and I got the part of the Clarence Darrow role.
Wow. Ooh, that was lucky.
Reenacting the Scopes Monkey Trials, and it inspired me to want to have a legal career and become an attorney. And it also inspired me because I think even at that age, in my teenage years, I was pretty much a non-believer, but that really solidified that more for me. But I'd have to say that I think the term is that I was apatheistic, as they say now, that I was non-believing, but that was the end of it. But I'll tell you what really further intensified some of my concerns and feelings was serving in the Maine legislature on the Judiciary Committee. That committee, at least in our state, has jurisdiction over things like discrimination based on sexual orientation, over abortion issues and women's reproductive choice issues. And I kept being confronted time and again with people who would tell me, this is morality, and here's the scripture that tells me what morality is. Now, I want to say there were very good, decent, honorable people who were very theistic, and I commend them for it. But I sure got a significant measure of people time and again who were using this word, morality, connecting it to scripture. But what I saw did not connect to my sense of morality one bit. And so over time, I became more convinced that there is a place in our society, and we need a greater place in our society, for the type of elected officials who would say the kinds of things that James Madison would say. You know, here, you folks, I love Madison, Wisconsin, and love that it's named after James Madison, who is a great personal hero of mine. And he was a deeply skeptical person about the involvement of religion in government. And so, frankly, my public service intensified those feelings. I once, they have the prayer that begins the session. And one time I said, all right, well, I'll give a prayer. And I cited the book Free Thinkers by Susan Jacoby that I think probably you're familiar with, and gave an entirely different type of opening to it.
And why not? Because we free thinkers are represented by our government as well.
Well, that's the way I saw it. I mean, it was almost, well, it was overwhelmingly Christians that would be invited to do this.
See, were they invoking Jesus? Were they saying sectarian things?
Some would, yes.
Because that's actually illegal.
Right, and you'd see that, and then you'd see, now, I will say, you know, occasionally there were Jewish folks who'd come in, a rabbi, and I remember, I think, that one time a Hindu, and all that, but I said, hey, let's throw in another perspective on this. And so I quoted Walt Whitman and Susan Jacoby and Free Thinkers.
Well, she would be, did she know about that?
No, I just read the book and loved it and thought, we need a wider diversity of voices.
She was on our show a few weeks ago.
Yeah, well, I'm sure you'll run into her and she'd be flattered. But I wanted to change the subject and ask what the Secure Coalition for America is going to be doing, or is it doing anything at all about finding out more about the views of the nominee for the Supreme Court, Sonia Sotomayor?
We are, in fact, and some of these are sort of quiet conversations through staff and with legislators and through our connections there. We have good, diverse membership both with our staff and with some of our board members, so that we can, we think, get some questions posed. And we do have allies in this. Certainly, Americans United for Separation of Church and State is also advocating that there be strong questions, getting more information about her views on church-state separation. So we're joining in offering a voice for that. Certainly, we also have questions and concerns about the nominee for Secretary of the Army. I don't know how familiar your listeners are with that situation, but Mr. McHugh is someone who voted against Congressman Obie's amendment that objected essentially to the proselytizing that was occurring, particularly in the Air Force.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, Congressman McHugh did not vote with the Obie amendment. And to me, the Obie amendment was at least appropriate in terms of its constitutional view. Of course, the military should not have proselytizing within its ranks.
And that is a huge issue in the military right now, and we have not really seen any real improvement yet.
And so we're concerned, and we feel that there should be questions, very significant questions, to the nominee for Secretary of the Army regarding that issue. We're further concerned that he was a supporter of a constitutional amendment regarding school prayer, along with quite a number of other members of Congress, which to me, again, undermines the very foundation of what James Madison had in mind. And I think when you are contradicting James Madison, you ought to pause, not be marching forward.
Do we know when the hearing is going to be? Is there a hearing date set for that nominee?
We've got that scheduled yet. I know that he issued a statement in response to one of our member organizations saying, well, I'll answer questions from members of Congress.
We're out of time now, Sean. Yep. Can you tell our listeners how to reach the Secular Coalition?
Yes, and I'm really glad you asked that question. Contact us at www.secular.org, and please sign up for our action alerts at www.secular.org. Then you can find out what's going on in Congress and nationally.
Thank you. Sean Faircloth is the new executive director for the Secular Coalition for America. And we want you to know we will not be praying for you in your new job.
Thanks so much for good wishes.
I'm Dan Barker. We're here with Annie Laurie Gaylor. We also want to thank our engineer, Dan Ginsberg, for engineering and producing our show. If you want to listen to any of these shows, go to our website, ffrf.org/radio. And go to ffrf.org to ask for more information about joining the Freedom From Religion Foundation.
Or call 1-800-335-4021 for information. And like I always say, don't just listen. Get involved. Join. Help us stay on the air. Help us take our litigation, such as our South Carolina case. And we'll be back next week, next weekend, for more blasphemous radio and
rational broadcasting.
Rational broadcasting.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker. I hope someday.